the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
I'm Charlie McCarran.
And I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
And today we are going to continue our series on trading card games with another classic, Pokemon, the Pokemon TCG.
Gotta catch them all.
Gotta catch them all. All right, so the Pokemon trading card game is a bit different from Magic, but you can also see some of the inspiration in it. Essentially, in the game, you are, of course, a Pokemon trainer. You have a deck of cards which include Pokemon cards, or I should say the Pokemon.
The Pokemans.
Yes. Energy and trainer cards. And I think those are the three divisions. I'm not sure if there are any other types. But on your turn, you draw a card. You get to play new Pokemon onto your bench. Each player has one active Pokemon and several benched Pokemon. And much like the video game, you can't have more than six Pokemon at a time. So one active in front of the others and then five on the bench. And you get to play one energy card. This is a lot like playing lands in Magic. Energy is what fuels your Pokemon so that they can fight. And you can also play trainer cards. You can play one supporter type trainer. Some trainer cards are supporters, which I guess are a bit stronger than others. The game originally didn't have supporters at some point. They added that. But you get to play one supporter trainer and any number of non-supporters, and they don't cost anything.
Right.
Which is nice, I guess. They don't cost anything except, of course, a card from your hand. Their card. Like, it takes up space in your deck. Anyway, and then your Pokemon gets to attack, and each Pokemon has some number of attacks. I think usually most Pokemon have two attacks. Some have only one. Maybe some have three. I'm not sure.
Some have three.
Yeah. Some Pokemon have abilities, which can be used even if the Pokemon's on the bench. Only your active Pokemon gets to attack. And your objective is simply to knock out your opponent's active Pokemon, or I guess any of their Pokemon. But for each Pokemon you knock out, you get a prize. And this is where things get kind of, well, things are interesting for a number of reasons. But at the start of the game, you deal out some number of cards, I guess six cards, standard. But you can alter that number, of course, to change the length of the game. And these are just face-down cards from your deck. You don't know what they are. But every time you knock out one of your opponent's Pokemon, you get to draw one of them into your hand, which... when all of them run out, you win because you've taken all the prizes, so you've knocked out six Pokemon. And that's kind of it. So you just keep going back and forth until somebody has claimed all their prizes. And one thing that strikes me quite strongly about the Pokemon TCG is just how well the mechanics capture the theme and also reflect the mechanics of the video game. Because unlike Magic the Gathering or Yu-Gi-Oh! Or any number of these other trading card games, the focus in Pokemon is completely on the Pokemon. Mm-hmm. The Pokemon are the victory condition. You don't have like your personal life points. It's your Pokemon. Their life points are what matters. You want to keep them alive. One Pokemon has the spotlight at all times, just like in the video games, right? You have one Pokemon out, that Pokemon fights the other Pokemon, and those are in the spotlight, and the other Pokemon are just sitting back on the bench waiting to be subbed in. The resource progression is tied into the Pokemon, which is one of the crazier aspects of this game if you think about it relative to the others, because just like in Magic, you're only playing one new resource each round. Your mana curve, but it's attached to your Pokemon.
It's a jagged mana curve.
Yes, it's like you put the mana on your the energy. Yep. You put the energy on your Pokemon, and when your Pokemon is knocked out, the energy goes away.
Yep.
Like, I guess I don't know enough about Magic, but I assume land destruction is pretty uncommon.
It's terrible if that happens to you.
It does happen.
And in Pokemon, it just happens all the time.
Yeah.
Like,
retreating?
Yes, retreating. Oh, yeah. So one of the mechanics in Pokemon is each Pokemon has a retreat cost, which is some amount of energy that you must discard from that Pokemon. So it's gone permanently, to swap it with a Pokemon from the bench. And it seems a little bit crazy that the resources are so transient, so destructible.
And limited.
Yeah, but the progression is all tied to the specific Pokemon and is lost when the Pokemon faints. The Pokemon's abilities are structured in a way where you have, like, generally a weaker one that costs less energy and then a stronger one. So, like, initially when you put the Pokemon out, it can only do the weaker thing. But then as you power it up with the energy cards, it gets to do the stronger thing. So there's a little mini arc with each of them.
So if it can live that long, then you can do the cool thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like of the TCGs I have seen, Pokemon's mechanics do the best job of supporting its theme and its IP.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny coming back to this after decades.
Right.
I tried it as a kid, you know, and I thought it was kind of cool, actually, how you have 1v1, like one Pokemon versus one other Pokemon. And yeah, sometimes they have abilities from their bench that you can use, but it was kind of a cool feeling of like deciding, should I power up my Pokemon that's out and attacking so that it can get one good attack in, even though I know it's going to die next round? Or do I save that energy to put it on one of my benched Pokemon? I thought that was a good tension on how to use your energy.
And I kept doing the retreat function, which was good for keeping my Pokemon alive. And I had limited Pokemon. I didn't draw very many.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, being able to kind of use that energy to then retreat them, bring out someone else, and then be able to carry that another one forward for the next round, then sneak in an extra attack.
Mm-hmm.
That feels clever. That feels nice. But it does have a cost to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a deeper level of tactics than I remember from when I played Pokemon back in the day. And obviously it was probably there, and I just, you know, was too young to really catch on to it. Like, no, I'm not retreating. That costs so much. Like, they're going to be knocked out anyway and lose the energy.
Mm-hmm.
Might as well try to keep them around a little bit longer.
And deny your opponent a prize.
And you still get to attack with the new Pokemon that comes out.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's not the thing with Magic. Magic, they come in normally and they cannot attack in the same round. They have summoning sickness.
Yeah.
And so this one, they do not have that, and they're able to attack right away. Which can be great as you're charging up someone on your bench to unleash and then have them do a sudden attack. That feels pretty neat.
Yeah. One of the other really interesting things I find about the way that the energy progresses in Pokemon as you add more and more to the specific Pokemon is that it allows for abilities that would not get used, really, otherwise. Because this actually is a problem that I know from the video games, that you see in the video games, which the card game has solved, which is there are some attacks like, say, Growl or Leer or, you know, all of these things. Oh, weaken the opponent very slightly, but don't do any damage. Like, I remember when I played the video games, I would not use Growl or Leer because it's a waste of time. Why would I do that when I can just attack the thing? And, you know, in like three or four attacks or whatever, knock it out. What's the point of weakening it? And I think this is kind of an issue whenever you have mutually exclusive attacks, which is that if I have four different attacks and one of them is clearly the best attack, I'm just going to keep using that one. And the others don't get to do anything.
Like Mewtwo.
Yeah. But in the Pokemon TCG, there is a reason to use the weaker attacks, which is that you don't have enough energy for the stronger ones.
Right.
Which means it's great. You get to use all of the attacks.
Oh, yeah.
Because
there's no downside to using a weak attack first. Like, you save the energy on there. And
No, I have not played Pokemon, the video game, in a minute or two.
Yeah.
Wasn't there, like, some kind of energy or something that they had
no.
in that? No, they didn't have, like, TP?
It's after the fact.
Oh, it's after the fact. So they have a max, and then you use it down.
Right, yes. You start off with some amount of power points, and then every time you use the ability, you get rid of one. It's a completely different feeling than powering it up.
Right,
and I like powering it up more.
I do, too. It gives the other player a chance to respond as well, and if they can't, then you can power up the big attack, and now they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Which feels really good.
Yeah. The powering up in Pokemon, if everyone knows probably, but you know, evolving your Pokemon.
Magikarp into Gyarados. Heck yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels so satisfying in the video game to evolve your Pokemon. And this one, it also felt satisfying because it's just a free action to do. We just
kept trying to do it too fast.
Yeah.
You cannot evolve a Pokemon that entered the play on that turn.
Yeah.
But we both, Charlie and I, tried to keep doing it.
Yeah. The evolution is a pretty, I would say it's pretty unusual in TCGs in the sense that you require specific Pokemon.
Right.
Now, each Pokemon, generally, there's going to be multiple different versions of it, and you can evolve any of them. So, like, there might be, say, five different versions of Staryu, and you can, they're all called Staryu, and your Starmie can evolve from any of them. So it's not like there's just one thing that can be evolved, but it's still very narrow, right? You're building you build a deck of cards, and if you want to have Starmie in your deck, you must have this specific card, not like a card with this subtype. Well, I suppose you could consider Staryu to be a subtype, but most of the games do not have such explicitly defined synergies where they call out, you need this card.
Yeah.
Right.
There's so the first TCG I got into was the Decipher Star Wars one. Came out a little bit after Magic, but
I think I saw that around. I don't think I've ever...
I loved it as a kid. Yeah. And I played it actually last year for the first time in couple decades.
Wow.
And it was very fun to see that game again in different light, because there's some things interesting about it that they really tried to do the same thing Pokemon is doing, where it's like super thematic. Luke uses Luke's lightsaber. Yeah. So if you draw Luke's lightsaber, you have to wait until you get Luke to play it on him. And I don't think any modern game would do that. Like, they'd at least let you play it on something, but maybe you get a bonus if it's with Luke.
Right.
But, that's just
kind
of a maybe old school design thing. But it was probably because people were just learning how to get these, like, combo things in players' heads as they're building decks. It's like,
Oh,
we should. And I don't know how you would do it in another way for Pokemon.
Oh, I think it's absolutely necessary for Pokemon.
Yeah.
But it actually, I mean, last time we were talking about, you know, how you can make deck building a little bit more accessible. And this is another way. Like,
if you want Charizard.
Just call it out. Yeah.
Yeah. You need this card.
Yeah.
It's simple. Okay. I want Charizard. I'm going to include these other cards.
Yeah.
Yep.
Now, the interesting business choice is, well, if you get evolution cards, you need to make sure you have the basic cards.
Yes.
So you need to make sure you buy enough packs.
Yeah. There is definitely, I suppose, an advantage on the business side to this system. Yeah.
Now, the funniest to me would be if they made the basic cards the rare ones and that would be just mean.
That would be cruel.
I'm pretty sure it's the other way around. Basic ones are common, so you'll find a lot of Charizards.
Charmanders,
thank you.
Yeah, although I do see a potential downside on the business front, which is, well, I guess I've never been to a Pokemon draft. I don't know how it works, but I have to imagine it's going to be more difficult than a Magic draft or, drafting for another game, because if you're...
High reward to draft a Charizard, and then you find out, oh wait, there's no way I'm going to get Charmeleon and Charmander.
I don't see how it would work. There's so many Pokemon out there.
Yeah.
So many Pokemon.
I guess if you're just drafting from a particular set, maybe the pool of Pokemon is less.
Just like Magic, right? Just like, you know, we're doing Avatar. I think they do very similar things, though.
Okay, but the evolution requirements still seem to me like they would not work for a draft.
No, you just get more picks.
Yes.
This is completely, you know, this is not going to work for our listeners, but tomorrow before Design Days is a Pokemon draft.
If you
want to go in early, that's what they're doing before Design Days.
We gotta peek at it and see what they do.
Yeah.
I am curious.
We can just ask them about
works.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. Yeah. And speaking of like booster packs and whatnot, one thing I think one of the coolest things about the Pokemon TCG is the victory condition. Oh. The prizes.
Yeah.
Because prizes are an amazing victory condition. Just as a reminder, basically, there's a set of cards that you remove from your deck and put them to the side. And whenever you defeat an opponent's Pokemon, you get to draw a prize and then just use it like any other card. And when you run out of prizes, you win. And this achieves at least three things that I can think of. The first is that it introduces a mystery box directly into the game. Mystery boxes are hugely addictive.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is one of the core appeals of TCGs outside the game, is buying booster packs and opening them. And Pokemon puts that into the game. Like, you defeat a Pokemon.
I didn't even think about it like that. The only
thing that would be better is if I was stealing Trevor's mystery. That's what I thought it was, but that would be a stealing card game.
That
would be how you'd have to remember whose cards were whose, and
you get to keep it forever.
I don't think that would be as good, because their cards may not help your deck.
You got a metal energy for your psychic deck.
Yeah,
cool.
So prizes introduce a mystery box. They also add some uncertainty about which cards are actually in your deck. Because, like, that card that you were counting on might not be in your deck at all. It might be in your prize pool.
Oh, yeah.
In which case, earning those prizes is even more important. But also, you can't just rely on, oh, I have this combo deck. I'm going to wait
Search for this.
Well, does Pokemon have a rule about if your deck runs out, you lose?
Yeah, you lose. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Three ways to lose.
The third thing it does is it, and this is really good, is it removes the need for a tracker. Because in Magic, it's typical to have like a D20 to track your life points.
True. Yeah.
And in other TCGs that are based on life totals, you also need to find some way to keep track of how much life you have.
The Pokemon have life, though.
That's true. The Pokemon do have life. Yes. Yes. And you still do have to track that.
But your character...
And you do still need a coin to flip.
Oh, my goodness.
The best randomizer in the history of all games. Coin flip.
We can talk about that. It's not. but how do you feel about the prize system?
I honestly do really like it. And having that kind of natural limiter that also gives you a benefit instead of the other player a detriment. Like, if you lose, like having to discard a card or something, like, I've already lost. Why are you bringing me down more? But giving them just a little benefit makes them feel nice and doesn't make you feel bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think it's a really good solution. And also, you can see where you're at in the game instantly.
Yeah.
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 It does add a little bit of positive feedback.
Yep.
But is it enough positive feedback to unbalance things? Maybe not. There's a lot of card draw already in Pokemon.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and really, it depends on how much of your energy you've burned through and how many Pokemon you have. I think it's a good resolution mechanic. I think it's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about coin flips.
All right, who's going to win? You or me? Coin flip.
So how they work in the game is usually they're a multiplier times your energy or something like that. Or flip a coin, you might get some extra attack.
I got extra cards for a draw. Like,
I mean, there are trainer cards that are literally just flip a coin. If you get heads, you get this thing. If you get tails, you get nothing.
Yeah, but it costs you nothing other than a slot in your hand. So wasn't your draw, which is your draw for the turn.
Yeah.
Which is pretty hefty.
Yes, but the main issue that I have with coin flips in Pokemon is not that they're random. I think, you know, it's okay to have
randomness. Random mechanics, yeah.
It's that flipping a coin is so cumbersome. It's not... Like, it is the absolute worst way to randomize anything, I think. Like,
well, and it might just be that the plastic coins we used from the set hit the table and then also cleared off all of my damage tokens on my Pokemon. So, you know, I automatically was healed by that because it removed them, right? That's how that works.
I think, like, one other more elegant solution is you draw a top card of your deck and... the number on there. So, like, I mentioned the Decipher.
Even a plus and a minus.
Yeah, I mentioned the Decipher Star Wars game had a thing like that where you reveal on the card on the top of your deck and it was like called a destiny draw. So anytime you shoot a weapon, sure, you do a destiny draw.
Ooh.
And the interesting thing with that one is some of the best cards in the game had real low destiny draws. So if you're doing, if you're loading your deck with like Emperor Palpatine and stuff,
he's, oh, yeah,
I don't know who has low destinies, but it's like you weight your deck with too good of cards, you're going to have real bad draws.
Oh, that's so clever.
Fascinating. That is fun.
So
yeah, so the,
it's yet another number stat on cards that already had like five different stats.
Here's the health, here's the attack, here's the defense, here's the resistance.
Yeah, that's it worked though.
That's really cool, and that's a great thing to add for deck building, because you could just use that to balance, you could use that to balance all of the cards.
Oh yeah,
in your deck,
because at least balance more.
If cards frequently rely on the destiny draw, then you have sort of a soft constraint for how you build the deck, right? Mm-hmm. And which means maybe you don't need other constraints as much.
I mean, granted, I never thought about that when I was a kid. I just wanted to put all the cool cards in there. Yeah. But I'm sure like tournament level players thought about that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
They probably do a nice mix and balance. It's like, okay, then I want to make sure I have a lot of these destiny, because I got really good destiny cards in here. And so I want to make sure those destiny cards can kick off really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of deck building costs, I guess, so when we played it was with monocolor decks. Well, mostly monocolor. I guess they're not entirely...
Yeah.
Like, you have some off colors, but they still don't use other types of energy.
Well, and what I think is really interesting about Pokemon versus Magic is that you don't need the energy to play the card, ever.
You can play the Pokemon without...
You always play Pokemon. You play the trainers freely. Like, there is no, like, thing holding you back from playing a card.
Right.
Just activating the card needs the right type of energy. And so, like, Charlie had blue cards, but they had colorless attack, so they could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah. And I mean, there are some cards that where the first attack is just colorless energy, which can be anything.
Right.
But then the second attack requires some special energy. So potentially, you could use that Pokemon, but even if... Like, even if you don't have the energy in your deck, or even if you haven't drawn the other color of energy, mm-hmm. you could still use its weaker attack while you're waiting to find that.
And honestly, the difference with Magic of, you know, not requiring the energy for the kind of spell cards, the event cards.
Yeah.
I think that really helps mitigate how many energy you need total. And it kind of compensates for that discarding of energy as things are defeated or, you know, retreated.
Yeah.
And so, I think that's really good.
Now, the thing about the different colors in Pokemon also is that they are actually quite relevant because the card game preserves the weakness and resistances of the video game, the sort of rock, paper, scissors matchups.
Where, like 10 elements or something, 8 elements? I don't know. Well,
it's reduced.
Is it? Oh, okay.
The trading card game does not have as many types as the video game. They cram a bunch of types into the same
flying
color.
Flying is, I think, normal.
Right, or like rock, ground, and fighting are all fighting type in the card game.
Oh, okay.
But even though they're all fighting type, they might have different weaknesses and resistances.
Sure.
So like a rock Pokemon... I think generally they still keep weaknesses and resistances from the game. So like a rock Pokemon will be weak to water, whereas a fighting Pokemon will be weak to psychic, even though they're both classified as the fighting type in the game's color.
Yeah.
But all of this matters because if you're attacked by a Pokemon whose color is your Pokemon is weak to, you take double damage. And if you're attacked by one that your Pokemon is resistant to, you take 30 less damage. The damage is in multiples of 10.
Yeah.
And, so the types of the Pokemon really matter. So when you're building a deck, if all of your Pokemon are weak to the same type and you run up against someone who's playing the type you're weak to, it's not going to be good for you. So diversity is important, and I guess it seems like the game allows you to have multiple different types in your deck without too much trouble.
Yeah, I think so.
Because of how the energy works.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm curious to see, because in the Pokemon video game, you did try to get one of every type so that you could swap them out more
for
easily.
The weaknesses and for
I guess... One of the things that makes it even more difficult, though, compared to Magic, is that the energy is attached to the Pokemon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's not just, oh, I found a water energy, now anything that needs one water is good. No, it's, okay, I found a water energy, I attached it to my Staryu. My Staryu just fainted, so...
now I have my Gyarados. Oh. Yep.
So there is a... I think there is definitely a limit to how many different types you can use, although it also depends on what your Pokemon need.
Yeah.
Because, like, having a Staryu that has a colorless attack means you have now access to water damage, and you can access that water damage in any deck.
True. Because
it'll work with any type. So if you want, you could have a rainbow team, but the ones the Pokemon that are off color, or
that comment is off color.
Off color Pokemon.
Well, like if your deck uses psychic energy, you know, you can probably find Pokemon of every type.
Right.
But they're going to be weaker than the Pokemon that specialize in psychic because they're the Pokemon that
But if they're dealing double damage.
Yeah, that would make up for that.
Yeah.
So that could be a way to build a deck.
Yeah.
Well, Rainbow team.
One thing that I was thinking about, and I think I will make it my takeaway, is that as we were playing these pre-constructed decks that you found online from somebody, I had the feeling like, oh, this is interesting. Like, I'm playing this deck that some stranger made and just like interpreting like how, oh, he must have really liked card draw and he didn't put very many energy in this deck.
But he had energy reuse.
Yeah.
Which was interesting.
Yeah. So it was a weird experience playing someone's deck that they made.
That they designed.
That they designed. Yeah. But what was cool was feeling like, wow, I want to try messing with this deck now. Like, how would I change this deck? And I think the TCGs, unlike any other thing, have such a you want to get better at the game, and you're going to want to play it many times because you're honing your deck outside the game to get better as a player, and like the creativity involved with it.
Oh yeah, is
super fun. So I also wonder like how many game designers were inspired because they started playing CCGs, because that's me.
I will say I think the earliest game I can remember playing was based on Pokemon. This was, I think, like when I was 7 or 8 or something. I saw the Pokemon TCG and I wanted to make my own version of it.
Same.
You know, I think there's
for
something
Magic and Star Wars, I guess.
Yeah, there's something really inspiring for people who have games that, you know, really encourage creativity, but also have these rules. It's like, well, why do these rules exist? I can be creative in these rules, but what if those rules didn't exist and I just made my own thing? Because my first start was RPGs. Mm. That was what I loved doing because I was a DM originally. And like, well, I'm creating these worlds, and but every time I play, you know, the D20 just always like makes things really hard for us. So what if we had a different system? And so that's where I started thinking about it. And like, I think there's a lot of Magic players out there because you're using creativity to make your decks. But then you start thinking like, what if, what if, what if? Mm-hmm. And, you know, 5 steps later, you have a game that you've designed and you don't know what to do with it. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, Magic might be the single most influential game for game designers.
Ooh.
That's my hot take.
There's a take.
I don't know if it's a hot take. But
I mean, Charlie, we've talked in the past about how it may also be quite important for supporting our industry because of how it keeps
local game stores alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic and other TCGs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess it's not Magic alone, necessarily. Yep.
Thanks, Richard Garfield. but sorry, we're talking about Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, Pokemans. So, for my takeaway, I really wanted to lean into something that Ananda's talked about a lot on this podcast, which is foreshadowing. And when you have to put something basically out on your bench first, you give your opponent a chance to see what might be coming. And if you have your big, bad, nasty thing and you start putting energy under it while it's on your bench, they have a chance to react to it and know that it's going to happen. And I think that's a really great way to have it if you have like this one-on-one situation. You have a great chance to foreshadow what is coming down the pike.
That's a really good point. And I guess one thing that occurs to me is compared to Magic, mm-hmm. Pokemon does a lot better job of foreshadowing because of how the energy is localized to a specific Pokemon.
And there's no interrupts.
Then there's no interrupts. In Magic, those lands your opponent is playing, they could use for anything. You don't know what's in their hand.
Yeah.
But in Pokemon, you can see them coming because you can't start attaching energy until they're on your bench.
Yep.
It does a really good job. You're right. It does a really good job of foreshadowing.
Yeah, and so you're the only thing that you're cut unaware by is the coin flip.
Yeah.
If you ever have a coin flip part, then that's what catches you off guard.
Yeah, or I mean like trainers. That
trainers
they play,
can be thrown down and like do mix up things quite a bit. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, like during combat, you know, if you're attacking, that's going to be what happens.
Yeah.
Did you survive it? Did you plan for it? What's coming out next? It's great when all the cards are on the table and you can actually see what's going to happen.
It's a really good point.
That's my takeaway.
I think my takeaway, I mean, I have a lot of takeaways, but I think the biggest one, or my takeaway is going to be the prize system.
I had a feeling.
I think the prize system in Pokemon is very good. It's an excellent victory condition. It feels appropriate to the game. It is fun. It introduces little mini mystery boxes as rewards for accomplishing the thing that you're supposed to accomplish. So it's not just like, oh, okay, I'm getting closer to victory because I'm getting victory points. It's, oh yeah, I get this thing. What is it? That's super fun. I think the prize system is great and I want to see it in more games.
That would be fun. Oh. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's the Pokemon TCG for you. And tune in next time when we talk about Star Wars Unlimited.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.